Hello, it's Friday, March the 22nd. You're listening to the Grains Matter Chatter podcast presented by Northcore Grains. I'm your host this week, Jeffrey Guy. No Dolores this week. She's out running the roads, as she's known to do. But this week, with no Dolores, we got an extra special guest joining us, Mr. Claire Kinlan. Good afternoon, Claire.
Good afternoon, Jeff. How are you? It's been a while. Thanks for having me back, and I'll do the best I can for you
guys. Oh, it's always great to have you back. Well, Claire, why don't you tell people what your actual position is now in this real world out here?
I'm doing lots of different things now, Jeff. I'm doing some fertilizer procurement, as well as doing a little bit of crop scouting on top of that, and work very close with Northcore Grains here.
And that's so we... People have been to our customer day in the past here, and I'm sure you'll be here again this year talking with the agronomists. We know Claire's tied right in on the agronomy side, and that's what we brought him in here for. So, Claire, let's jump right into this as we're getting into the new crop year, not too far away from seeding here near the end of March, another month probably.
Oh, it's coming quick, Jeff. I actually was in Western Ontario this week, and I saw, or last week, sorry, last week, a guy was no-tilling some oats in. Up in the Peterborough area into that nice weather that we had last week. It was actually dry ground, not even working on the frost. So it's going to happen sooner than later. Now, they probably got a couple inches of snow on those, but that won't hurt those oats.
So. Yeah, that's good. So let's talk about some of the things that I find the farmers we're talking about. So last year was the most expensive crop our farmers have ever planted.
Yes, it was, yeah.
So everybody's talking about, prices are down this year. Well, market prices are down, but let's say prices on fertilizer and chemicals and stuff. So I thought, why not ask Claire?
Yeah, when you look at input costs, you know, your biggest input cost is still your land, right? And, you know, has it gone down in the area? I don't think so. I think everybody's still at high land rent as well as land purchases. That hasn't changed. But when you look at some of the controllable ones are some of the ones that you have to pay to get a crop, or maybe you might want to change some of your cropping practices to save a little bit. So when you look at crop protection, it's pretty well flat from where it was last year.
So maybe crop protection, that's chemicals then?
Yeah, we don't like to use that word though, Jeff, because there's more than just chemicals to it, right? So when you look at crop protection, you know, we're trying to grow the best crop we can. So that means keeping it green, keeping it healthy, and eliminating that weed competition from it. So when you look at crop protection products being where they were, glyphosate's down significantly. So last year we were paying probably close to $20 a liter for glyphosate, and this year it's well under 10. So when you start looking at where glyphosate has been, and it's a key product for most guys, so it's a real driver to save some money.
Well, that's great that it's down. So the it's very widely used, utilized, and it's just been a great chemical, a great product for us. Exactly. I'll try not to use that C word also. C word for me normally means China, so it's
that's right.
I don't think there.
Well, you think about it, water is a chemical too, right? And we need that in order to grow our crops, so we got to make sure we're using crop protection.
So the what one of those big input costs was fertilizer last year. It got all the headlines last year how much fertilizer was up. And
It's a good news story on crop nutrients instead of fertilizers. I'll use crop nutrients. it's a good news story. It's not great, but it's definitely a good news. Like when you look at nitrogen costs, where they are, they're down significantly from where they were last year. And the main driver on that is demand. And when you look at what China is not doing in the world market when it comes to urea, Ontario is in a very unique position on crop nutrients, in the standpoint that we play in the global market, so that we're very grateful and lucky to have the St. Lawrence. So if you look at the St. Lawrence River and the ports to bring crop nutrients and fertilizer into Ontario, into the eastern Canada, we're well positioned, and it's probably saving the farmers anywhere from $70 to $100 a ton on product just because we can use the Seaway. So when you look at nitrates are down significantly from last year.
So is significantly, is that like 25, 30, 40%?
Probably 40%, 30 to 40% down on fertilizer. The exception of that being phosphates. So phosphates are still very expensive. They're still down from where they were last year, maybe a couple hundred bucks down, but not in half by any means. And it's the big play on phosphates is the U.S. tariff on phosphates coming into the U.S. And really, phosphates are made in Florida, from Mosaic in Florida. And there is a couple other sources in North America, but pretty limited. They have a tariff tax coming in. So any phosphates that come into the U.S. gets tariffed. When it comes into Canada, we can buy Moroccan and stuff, but we cannot buy Russian fertilizer. And as much as we would like to say the world was even again, but we really miss Russian fertilizer in Canada. One of the big things is Russia makes good fertilizer. Their nitrogens are good. Their phosphates are good. It's not like it was before. But the political unrest it's not feasible.
Political unrest. That's a nice way to talk about the conflict they're having there. Yeah. So that is good news on fertilizer and the seed side of things. Are you tied in on that now?
Yeah, seeds are still there. Seeds was up a bit this past fall, like not crazy, didn't really double, but their seed prices have increased. So when you look at the big three that we can control, crop protection down to flat, seed up slightly. And when you look at fertilizer, down significantly.
So one thing is, as we just switch just a little bit here on the fertilizer, you were telling me about the usage of fertilizer or fertilizer applied in the U.S. last fall.
Oh, yeah. They had a huge fall in the U.S. last year, a record application fall. And for those that don't know, they store most of their nitrogen in the ground in the fall. So they put anhydrous down or put the gas down in the fall, and that's what they plant into in the spring, and they had a record application year. So it's going to be interesting to see what next Thursday's report has for planting intentions, especially when you move east to west in the U.S.
And that's so they put down a lot of fertilizer last fall, so it would kind of lead us to believe probably more corn acres. As a quick thought, especially
maybe
in the nitrogen.
Maybe in the west. Yeah, I'm not so sure that will echo in the east. So east of the Mississippi, it's pretty hard to put anhydrous down. Huh. So it's always in the west. So, which is where the corn acres are too, right? So
that's still interesting. That would tie more into our market side of things here instead of the agronomy side. So a little more on the agronomy. Just want to talk about soybeans. So this year we've been reading in the news here how the dicamba problems down in the U.S. for soybeans. So what's that on the Xtend?
Xtend, yeah. I wish they would have changed those names, because you got Xtend and Enlist, right? Mm-hmm. And it can be confusing to people that don't do this every day.
So the Xtend has, have they extended them for 2 years?
I think there is some extensions. There's a bit of a runway to resolve that. And of course, there's some appeals in the U.S. I don't think it's all said and done yet on what it looks like.
So if it extends, allows you to use dicamba in your crop protection side.
It means that the dicamba, or we used to know it, some of us gray-haired guys, Jeff, would know it as Banvil, right?
I thought it was a great chemical back in its day.
And we've sprayed a lot of Banvil or dicamba on corn for a long time, right? And we're familiar with that product. But it used to cup beans and pretty well kill beans. But through breeding and genetically enhanced products, it's tolerant to dicamba, which is really good for broadleaves. And it gives you, it's another tool in the toolbox for working on.
Used to snap those azuki beans, volunteer azukis, I remember that. And then, so the Enlist soybeans, you can use 2,4-D.
2,4-D, and so that's, you know, next to glyphosate. I don't hold me on this, but I think it's the second most popular herbicide in the world. So everybody's familiar with it. I've been using the technology for 5 years now, fairly aggressively, and I really like Enlist beans from the standpoint, mainly why I like Enlist beans so much in Eastern Ontario is we got this horsetail, and there is nothing that I have experienced that can work on horsetail the way that the 2,4-D can work on it. And we used to say, horsetail doesn't take that much away from beans. We said that because we couldn't control it. So when you can control it, it makes it a lot better. So yeah. So don't get used, and I mean, they're tools in the toolbox, right? So, and you could get into a lot of political stuff between Bayer and Corteva, Corteva pushing the Enlist, Bayer pushing the Xtend Max, or the Xtend portfolio. And then you got other seed companies, your NK, your Pride, those companies in the middle that are carrying both, right? So the biggest thing, if you got weed problems, you can use it as a very good tool in the toolbox. I still think in Eastern Ontario, we're not utilizing the Xtend or the Enlist fully on every acre, because it still comes back to you need early season weed control. Xtend works really well for that because you put it down as a pre-emerge, gets the field off to a clean start. Where I utilize a lot of my Enlist is on those horsetail farms, and I'll put down a good pre or early post before the weeds up, and then I'll use that Enlist to clean those fields up. So you got to really watch it for flea bane and some of the other weeds that we struggle with.
They both have their part in, say, in the toolbox for on the agronomy side for what works on your farm and stuff. For each farmer could be a little bit different on here. And
yeah, genetics is a big part of it. Absolutely. There's good genetics on both sides. But remember that it's just one of the tools in growing a good bean crop. You know, we got to manage that white mold. We got to, especially in Eastern Ontario, we got to manage those soybean aphids, those spider mites if we get them. And we got to hope for those August rains. So there's a lot more to getting high-yielding beans than deciding I'm going to use Enlist or Xtend.
So we have another agronomist comes on with us the odd time. I won't mention his name, but we all know who he is.
Yeah.
And he likes us to plant soybeans early, get soybeans in early.
Yeah, I think I don't have a problem planting soybeans early. If you're going to have a bad stand, you're better to have a bad stand of beans. I personally don't want a bad stand of either. So I plant according to the conditions. And if you got that guy that just has to be the first guy out that wants to muck up a field, then have him plant his beans first.
That's quite a way to put it.
There's less opportunity to lose. Personally, I want to do it right the first time. And if we can plant them at the same time, plant them at the same time. Plant them to the field conditions, not to the calendar.
And I think a lot of the farmers now are trying to do that, really. Yep. Get both them two seeders going at the same time in their operations and that.
Yeah, I have personally not seen the benefits of planting soybeans April 10th or April 12th. My best success has always been that last week of April, first week of May for planting corn and beans. But if you're going to muck something in, muck in beans.
But you know, that last week of April, early May, still lots of people would still consider that early for the beans. And it wasn't that long ago that May long weekend was the time.
Now you're dating yourself, Jeff. Everybody's got their beans done by the 15th of May now. Nobody's waiting to plant beans.
Nobody's waiting anymore. Well, I think that's probably enough for this week, Claire. Really great to get an update there on some of the big view on the cost for the farmers going forward, because, you know, there's lots of that talk, and a little bit of the agronomy on the soybean side is very much appreciated. And
yeah,
I know we'll look forward to seeing you at Customer Day, and
yep,
maybe we can get you on the podcast sometime before that, after the crops are planted.
Sure, so. Sounds good. Best thing about planting a crop, plant it right the first time, do the little things right, and the big things will fall into place.
Oh, love those words. So that's great, Claire. Thanks again. And, I think I'll get right into the crop talk now. Or the market talk, sorry. Well, as we get into the markets, let's see here. Corn was up $1.02 a ton for the week. Soybeans were up about $3 the week, old new crop. Spring wheat was up $6 old crop, $4 a ton new crop. And winter wheat was the star, up $9, $10 old new crop. Wheat was the star this week, being up. So let's see what drove prices this week. Wheat had a little more things in the market. The Russian bombings of the Odessa port in the Ukraine supported prices for a couple days. The EU putting a tariff on imports of Russian wheat and grains, or talk about putting the tariff on, that actually supported prices. And maybe the last thing was that Russia actually increased prices of their wheat as they're trying to export. And this came in the news as Egypt was put a tender out for wheat, and they didn't buy all the wheat they were looking for because Russia actually put prices up a couple dollars a ton, and so Egypt didn't buy everything. So those things were kind of supportive for wheat over the week. Soybeans and corn, you know, Brazil continues to dominate the the demand from China in January and February. Brazilian exports of corn were up like 250% and compared to last year, and exports out of the U.S. to China were down like half or a third, and the soybean sides, it just keeps being more and more from Brazil and less from the U.S. So, and I guess really the biggest thing in the markets this week was the markets are waiting to see what happens next Thursday. It's right before Good Friday. The Thursday they have the March planting intentions report, which is from an actual farmer survey the USDA does. And where they come in with corn and soybean acres probably will set the direction for prices going into spring planting. So that'd be the big thing next week. And the podcast will come out next Thursday also. Next Friday will be a Good Friday and be an official holiday. So, well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. It was great to have Claire on. And everybody have a great week. And we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for now, and bye-bye.